listening to Iris, the Iowa Reading Radio Reading Information Service. Welcome to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Sunday, March 24th. Support for this reading comes from the DuPaco R.W. Hofer Foundation. I'm Lois.
And Helen.
And here is our first story. On patrol after dark. Dubuque Police Department patrol car turned down one dark street and up another, moving from White Street onto East 21st Street, then south onto Central Avenue.
Get closer. Closer to the mic. Get closer to the mic.
It was 12:36 a.m. on a recent morning in Dubuque, and the car's driver, Officer Ryan Cole, had spotted a vehicle operating in a suspicious manner. With one hand on the steering wheel, Cole typed the license plate number into his patrol car's mobile computer terminal, commonly called the MCT. Within seconds of Cole entering the license plate number into his MCT, a series of reports from vehicle registration to local and national crime data clearinghouses appeared on the screen. "That wasn't the car I was looking for," Cole said. The officer continued his search for a similar vehicle, one whose driver was known by police to have outstanding warrants for his arrest. "My biggest thing that I like to go after are the worst people on the street, people with warrants, guns, drugs, that kind of stuff," Cole said. Cole, 24, has served on the Dubuque Police Force for 2 years. As a younger officer on the force, without much seniority, he is assigned to night patrols. On a recent night, the Telegraph Herald accompanied Cole on his rounds. He was one of 10 officers assigned to Shift 4, a 10-hour stretch of duty that begins at 7 p.m. and ends the next day at 5 a.m. "I try to stay busy all night long," Cole said. During the course of the night, Cole drove approximately 80 miles along Dubuque streets. He conducted 5 traffic stops, issued a citation for speeding, and arrested a man on a charge of driving while his license was revoked. In many ways, it was a typical overnight shift for a Dubuque police officer on night patrol. Police patrols in Dubuque are organized into 5 10-hour shifts, and patrol officers generally work 4 10-hour days per week. Cole's recent night on Shift 4 began with him covering both the industrial and North End territories of the police department's geographical districts of Dubuque as car 123. Cole served in that patrol role from 7 to 11 p.m. He switched to car 140, a traffic car that can roam the city freely from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. Cole then served as Car 180, a car patrolling areas west of downtown Dubuque from 1 a.m. to the end of his shift at 5 a.m. Captain Brendan Welsh, who oversees nighttime patrol, said he likes to having officers switch territories or patrol roles throughout the night. It prevents complacency, and it also gives officers an opportunity to work different sides of the city, Welsh said. There are certain police calls which a dispatcher starts by saying all cars. That essentially means territories are out the window. Anybody available, we need you here, he said. That's generally going to be a major car accident with injuries, a house fire, shots fired, a known stabbing or shooting, or a serious injuries. All cars initially respond to these major cases. They return to their assigned territories or patrol roles when a supervisor decides that it's appropriate. Officer Brittany Nyan pulled one of the parking lot of the Laws Enforcement Center and onto Iowa Street, driving north at 7:30 p.m. on a recent night. Her journey for several hours on this night would involve crisscrossing the streets in Dubuque's downtown core at the police department's assigned Car 10. As cheesy as it sounds, I've always wanted to help people, Nyan said. Driving along Dubuque's dark streets, Nyan glanced once from one side of the street to the other while also examining passing vehicles for inoperative brake lights or other equipment violations. I grew up here in Dubuque, said Nyan, 25. My mom is a court reporter, so I grew up listening to some of the cases that she could talk about. I don't think I could do a desk job, so I decided to become a police officer. Cole said his work is so important to him that he often chooses to perform more than required. I sign up for a ton of overtime, he said. Some nights, Cole will work 14 hours. The most an officer can choose to work is 14 hours per day, Wells said. Sometimes officers don't have a choice. We have an emergency or a natural disaster. We can have an officer work longer than that, Wells said. Cole also discussed what keeps him patrolling at night while most people are asleep. Everyone says, I want to help people, he said. That's a part of it, a big part of it. I just think it's really critical to work hard to get guns and drugs off the street.
Dubuque City Manager Mike Van Milligan will propose what is likely the lowest property tax rate among larger cities in Iowa on Monday, today, March 25th, when the City Council holds a public hearing to set the property tax levy for the coming fiscal year. The public hearing begins a series of city department hearings slated for the rest of this week into April. The city must pass its budget by April 15th. The fiscal year starts July 1. The proposed levy to support the general fund is a little over $28.2 million. Meeting that funding level would require a 0.25% increase to the tax rate to $9.93 per $1,000 assessed value. The average residential assessed value is $196,508, so the proposed rate would result in a $40.75 increase to the bill of the average homeowner. Van Milligan said the budget process was driven by five factors: city council goals and priorities, major capital improvement projects, leveraging federal and state grant opportunities, public safety, and streets. It also comes at a time when the state legislature has changed several tax policies to reduce the burden on taxpayers as property assessment values have risen dramatically in recent years. In turn, that has left city and county governments with less revenue derived from property taxes amid rising costs. We're doing our best, and I hope the citizens will recognize that we are doing our best in a setting which household costs and the costs of living have gone up. City Council Member Kathy Wethall said at a budget presentation earlier this month, "The costs of running a city are going up, and they are going up dramatically. I promise the taxpayers we will be as thoughtful as we can, but we must all remember that as much as we want new services and new opportunities for our city, we may be in a place where we have to do less than we want to do this year." The Office 11 Most Important Cities in Iowa, Dubuque's proposed property tax is expected to be the lowest. Ames set its rate at $10.09 for fiscal year 2025. Other cities' proposed tax rates have not been finalized. In fiscal year 2024, Waterloo had the highest rate at $19.73. In his budget guidelines, Van Milligan highlighted several items that are recommended for funding, including a 5% wage increase for police union and non-union employees and a 3% raise for Teamsters-affiliated employees. Contract negotiations are continuing with the unions representing firefighters and engineers. The total additional cost to the general fund would be $1.9 million. Land and a bureau chief position for emergency medical service is also included. Van Milligan also recommended several capital improvement projects. Among those are Catfish Creek sanitary sewer improvements totaling $47 million across multiple projects. It will eliminate some of the infiltration progress with our sewer system in the Catfish Creek area, Van Milligan said. The Water and Resource Recovery Center is slated for three major projects totaling about $10 million, including addressing how to handle high-strength waste. Another project of note is a proposed reconstruction of US 20 and Northwest Arterial Intersection, which is the most traveled in Dubuque. It would be an Iowa Department of Transportation project with an assist from the city. Several public safety and other street projects are also recommended for approval. This budget puts us in a pretty good place to impact some public safety issues that need work, Council Member Rick Jones said. The Dubuque City Council will hold a public hearing at 6:30 p.m. on Monday, March 25th, in the second floor council chambers at the historic Federal Building on 6th Street. Prior to the public hearing, City Manager Mike Van Milligan will present his recommended fiscal year 2025 budget at 5:15 p.m. The public can view and participate in the meeting in person or virtually. The meeting will be aired live on MediaCom cable channels 8 and 111.7, live streamed live and archived on the city's website at cityofdubuque.org/media and live streamed live on the city's Facebook page at facebook.com/cityofdubuque. A complete meeting agenda with supporting documents is available at tinyurl.com/dbqcouncil. The city has scheduled a state of additional meetings as part of the budget process. All meetings will be held at 6:30 p.m. in the council chambers. Tuesday, March 26, budget proposals for the city attorney's office, city clerk's office, public information office, human resources, city manager's office, and city council. Wednesday, March 27, budget proposals for health services, Carnegie Stout Public Library, Dubuque Regional Airport, City of Shared Prosperity and Neighborhood Support, Office of Equity and Human Rights financial budget. Thursday, March 28th, budget proposals for housing and community development, purchase of services, public works, economic development. Tuesday, April 2nd, budget proposals for parks, recreation, Office of Community Impact, Multicultural Family Center. And Thursday, April 4th, budget proposals for emergency management, emergency communications, police, fire. Monday, April 8th, budget proposals for information technology, water and resource recovery center planning. Tuesday, April 9th, budget proposals for Five Flags Center, Grand River Center, Iman Arena, transportation services engineering. And finally, Thursday, April 11th, public hearing to adopt the fiscal year 2025 budget.
Dubuque Brewery bags statewide award. The Dubuque Brewery has won a statewide tourism award. The Iowa Tourism Office last week recognized Seven Hills Brewing Company, 1085 Washington Street, with the Outstanding Dining Business Award for Metropolitan Establishments at the 2024 Iowa Tourism Conference. Award winners were selected for their hard work and dedication to the tourism industry, according to news release from the Iowa Economic Development Authority. A total of 24 businesses were recognized across 13 categories. Seven Hills was established in 2017 and since has grown into a staple of Dubuque's historic Millwork District. The brewery and restaurant are well known for their variety of high-quality brews and bites, and the company also has event spaces available for rent. In addition to its Dubuque operating, Seven Hills also operates Seven Hills West in Dyersville and Seven Hills North and Bistro 7 in Platteville, Wisconsin.
Another article, gender-affirming clothing pop-up set for late March. A gender-affirming clothing pop-up is set to be held in Dubuque at the end of March. The event will provide free clothing in a broad range of sizes in a safe space for members of the LGBTQ plus community, according to a news release. Local salon Ritual Beauty will also host a gender-affirming makeup station, and a new Moon Counseling Alliance will run community resource table. Custom binder fitting and ordering will also be available. The release states that there is a need for transgender, non-binary, and LGBTQ plus individuals to have a safe, judgment-free space to access gender-affirming clothing. This event provides that, as well as opportunity to connect with other LGBTQ plus community members. A raffle will also be held to raise funds to provide gender-affirming items free of charge. Those interested can Venmo at Ritual Beauty DBQ $1 per one entry and $5 per three entries. The raffle includes gift certificates and items from local businesses, including Knockout Melts, Ritual Beauty, Evolve Day Spa, The Crow's Nest Dubuque, River Lights Bookstore, and Rogue Wax Room. The event will be held from 12 to 5 p.m. on March 24th at Smokestack 62 East 7th Street on the second level.
Opinion. Collaboration provides boost for child care. The grand opening of the Bright Minds campus on Dubuque's west side shows how collaboration and community partnerships can result in real solutions to complex problems. Representatives of Dubuque's Initiative and Greater Dubuque Development Corporation hosted the opening and tours of the campus at 7900 Chavanel Road, which included a visit from Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds, along with testimonials from individuals impacted by the new child care development. The Bright Minds Building, which nonprofit Dubuque Initiatives owns, is home to the new Dubuque Y Early Learning Center, which opened in January with initial capacity for 120 children. The building also will host Dubuque Community School District's new preschool center once it opens this fall. Last week's announcement noted that more than $600,000 has been allocated to 16 Dubuque County child care centers for recruitment of 141 additional staff members. The extra staffing will result in an additional capacity of 516 child care slots countywide. This is how public-private partnerships can work in Dubuque. For years, child care access has been a major issue in the Dubuque County area and a significant contributing factor to the worker shortage that hit hard following the pandemic. A 2022 study commissioned by GDDC showed that in many cases, parents are forced to leave the workforce because of child care challenges. Of the 30 businesses interviewed for the study, 26 reported a barrier in availability of child care, and 13 specified the need for infant care. A 2022 report on Iowa Child Care Resource and Referral found that there were 12,443 children ages 9 and younger in Dubuque County, but only 6,035 total child care spaces in the county. Running a child care business has been a challenge that has grown harder and harder and becomes more difficult to hire staff due to industry-wide low wages. Daycare providers lamented struggling to find a balance between not overcharging families and also being able to get enough staff. The shortage of child care also put a strain on local families. Last year, the U.S. Department of Labor reported that average child care costs could total between 8 and 20% of a family's median income. Now this influx of financial support will help fill slots in the many facilities operating below licensed capacity due to low staffing. The fund was kickstarted by a $560,000 state grant and since has grown to over $1.3 million in available dollars thanks to $780,000 in donations from area employers. A total of 11 employers have donated to the fund so far, but the largest contribution is from John Deere Foundation, which recently pledged $600,000 to the initiative over the next 3 years. Other local employers who have contributed to the initiative include the Ison Supply Company, Old Casino, and the City of Dubuque, and more.
Letters to the Editor by Sue Keyes. Anyone who runs for office in any election in America should be required to answer one question: will you accept the results if you lose? If candidates refuse to answer, make justifications, or say no, they should not be running in that election. The only viable answer is yes. Our country is based on the peaceful transition of power after a free and fair election. If anyone believes elections are not free and fair, why would that person choose to participate in such a contest? People saying that the election was rigged if they lose, but fair if they win, is childishly hypocritical and dictatorial. Calling up a governor to say that they just need to find a few thousand more votes is illegal and fraudulent, and to incite an insurrection and stand by as followers defy police, call for the hanging of the vice president, and cause death and destruction to overturn the results of an election, I think we can all agree that constitutionally That's not how a free and fair elections are designed to work in America. Only those candidates who will accept the outcome of an election should be participating in it. If this is not the case, the American people should demand that the candidate drop and quit wasting our time, money, and energy. A side note, the First Amendment says, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of press or the right of people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances.
You are listening to the Dubuque Telegraph Herald on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. Your reader is Lois
and Helen.
If you have any comments on this or any IRIS program, please call 243-6833 or toll free at 877-404-4747. And don't forget, this and many other IRIS programs are available from our website at iowaradioreading.org. Now we return to the Telegraph Herald with the obituaries.
Mary Schauer. Mary L. Mary Lou Minnie Schauer of Dubuque, Iowa, passed away on Wednesday, March 20th, 2024, at Sunset Park Place in Dubuque, surrounded by loved ones. Massive Christian burial was held today at St. Anthony's Church in Dubuque. Mary was born on June 29, 1927, in Dubuque, Iowa, to Al and Stella Joachim Beitzel. She attended St. Columbkill's in her younger years and worked at her father's grocery store making deliveries. She took great pride in her work for her dad. Mary went on to obtain a teaching degree at Clark College in Dubuque. She taught several grades for 1 year in a one-room schoolhouse. Her Humpk Road Schoolhouse is on display as a historical building next to the Ham House Museum on Shiraz Avenue in Dubuque. She married the love of her life, Robert Bob Schauer, on November 24, 1949, at St. Anthony's Church in Dubuque. She remained a member of St. Anthony's for 75 years. Mary and Bob started their family in 1951 with the birth of her firstborn daughter, Sherry. Next came son Bob, followed by Betty, Terry, Sam, Scott, and Mike. Surviving her are her children, Bob, Elizabeth, Terry, Sam, Scott, Mike, son-in-law, 26 grandchildren, 65 great-grandchildren, sisters Jean, Pat, Jackson, sister-in-law Elsie Beitzel. Mary was preceded in death by her husband Bob, parents Al and Stella Beitzel, daughter Sherry, son-in-law Carl, granddaughter Rachel Burning Bob, brother Bob, sister Kate, sister Rita, brother Pete, sister-in-law Mary, Jane Beitzel, and brother-in-law Alan Jackson. In lieu of scholars of flowers, memorials can be made to the Power Prayer Adoration Chapel at 1860 St. Ambrose Street in Dubuque. Mary's family would like to thank hospice for their help with their mother. A special thank you to Dr. John Whalen and staff who lovingly cared for Mom over these many years. Online condolences may be left for the family at www.millerfeld.com.
Betty Zimmer. Elizabeth Betty Zimmer, 83, of Dubuque, passed away peacefully Friday, March 22nd, at the Stonehill Care Center in Dubuque, surrounded by her family. Visitation will be from 5 until 8 on Tuesday, March 26th, at Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home and Crematory. Additional visitation will be from 9:30 until 10:30 Wednesday at Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home and Crematory. Mass of Christian burial for Betty will be at 11 a.m. Wednesday, March 27th at Holy Spirit Parish Sacred Heart Catholic Church with Father Stephen Garner as the celebrant. Burial will be in Mount Calvary Cemetery. Betty was born October 16, 1940, in Dubuque, the daughter of Leonard and Louise Stecher Steckline. On May 16th, she married Norm Zimmer at Sacred Heart Catholic Church. She was a graduate of Immaculate Conception Academy. She was an administrative assistant at Wallard High School the year the school opened in 1959 and continued to work there for 32 years. She was a member of Holy Spirit Sacred Heart Catholic Church and the Holy Rosary Society. She was always present with her infectious smile at family gatherings and grandchildren events. She was a devoted fan of the Chicago Cubs and the Iowa Hawkeyes. Survivors include her husband, Norm, three sons, Brian Zimmer, Jay Pamela Zimmer, and Bob Carol Zimmer, seven grandchildren, four great-grandchildren, and five siblings. She was preceded in death by her parents, one brother, one sister, and one brother-in-law. In lieu of flowers, memorials have been established to the American Diabetes Society and the Stonehill Memory Unit. The family extends heartfelt gratitude to Dr. Chris Still, Dr. Scott Brock, Luther Manor, Stonehill, and Hospice of Dubuque.
Ronald Hickson, Lamont, Iowa. Ronald Ron Hickson, age 84, of Lamont, passed away March 14, 2024, at the University of Iowa Hospital's Neurosurgery ICU while surrounded by his loving family. To honor Ron's life, a private family service is being held at Grandview Methodist Church on a later date. Ron was born June 30, 1939, in Portland, Oregon, to Paul and Ruby Campbell Hickson. Several years later, the family moved to Long Beach, California, where they lived until moving to Nebraska to the family farm when Ron was 7 years old. He graduated from Chapel, Nebraska High School. He attended and graduated from college at Kearney, Nebraska. He married Janet K. Erickson in October 1960. Together, they raised two beautiful daughters. Later, they divorced. Ron taught shop at Dubuque Senior High School from 1968 until 1980, when he began teaching at NICC until his retirement in 2000. Ron also served in the Naval Reserve for 22 years, from which he retired. During his time of service, he served on various ships in Germany, Korea, and Spain. In 2006, Ron married his best friend, Lois Trent, and they traveled many countries together. He loved their home in the country and spending time with his children and grandchildren, both here and in Colorado. He was an avid military history buff, and whenever he could capture someone's attention, he would love to engage them in discussing. His surviving besides his wife, Lois Huxton, are his daughters, Cheryl and Chris, four grandchildren, great-granddaughter, Kiara, four stepchildren, nine step-grandchildren, one step-grandson, two brothers, Gary and Tim, many nieces and nephews, and former wife, Janet Hickson. He was preceded in death by his parents and aunts and uncles. The family wishes to thank all of the staff at University of Iowa Hospital Neurosurgery Unit, along with the Palliative Hospice Care, for their compassionate care and concern. Online condolences for Ron's family may be left at www.tristatecremationcenter.com.
John W. Tilton. John W. Jack Tilton, 77, passed February 18, 2024, at home, at peace after an 8-month illness. Born December 28, 1946, in central Illinois, he moved to the tri-state area in 1969 to teach art at the Galena Public Schools. Known to this day as Mr. T, his classes combined creativity with humor and fun. Jack taught for 12 years before transferring his creative skills to Dubuque area publishing and communications businesses for over 35 years. He retired from the University of Dubuque. In 2017, he achieved his lifelong dream of becoming a full-time watercolorist. His paintings were featured in both national and international watercolor exhibits, adorned the walls of many Midwestern galleries, and were published in compilations of the best American painters. Jack played most anything with strings, participating in a number of bluegrass and old-time music groups. He is survived by his wife of 41 years, Chris Chapin Tilton, Doug Tilton, Shannon D. Wolfe, Aaron Tilton, Drake Ashley Tilton, Yvonne Scott, Jim Trish Tognasi, Marilyn Tognasi, and all their children and grandchildren. He was preceded by his parents and Louise Tognasi. A memorial art show will be held in Jack's honor at the University of Dubuque on Friday, September 27th. A private celebration of life will be held at the Galena Center for Arts on Saturday, September 28th, following a committal of his ashes at Casper Creek National Cemetery. Memorials may be sent directly to the Galena Center for the Arts and the University of Dubuque to support arts education projects in Jack's memory. In addition, Jack and Chris have developed a line of merchandise featuring Jack's artwork, which will be available in select area locations, with all profits contributed to the two memorial funds. Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory Dubuque assisted the family. Online condolences may be left at the Leonard Funeral Home website.
Harold J. Lang. Harold Skip Lang, 93, of East Dubuque, passed away at 4:10 a.m. on Friday, March 22, 2024, at the Galena Strauss Senior Care Community in Galena, with his family by his side. Massive Christian burial will be held at 10 a.m. Tuesday, March 26th, at St. Mary's Church in East Dubuque, with Father Dennis Vargas officiating. Burial will follow in the East Dubuque Cemetery with a flag presentation by American Legion Post number 787. Family and friends may call from 4 to 8 p.m. on Monday at the Miller Funeral Home in East Dubuque, where the parish rosary will be recited at 3:30 p.m. Monday. Members of the East Dubuque Fire Department will meet in a group at 6:15 p.m. on Monday at the funeral home. There will also be a visitation on Tuesday from 8:45 to 9:30 a.m. at the funeral home. Skip was born on May 10, 1930 in East Dubuque, the son of Joseph J. and Rena A. Grassel Lang. He was a graduate of East Dubuque High School. Skip was united in marriage to Mary Teal Thill on October 6, 1956, at Holy Ghost Church in Dubuque. She preceded him in death on February 12, 2023. He was a veteran of the U.S. Navy, serving from February 20, 1951 to December 10, 1954, during the Korean conflict. a retired member of the East Dubuque Volunteer Fire Department, where he served for 25 years, also serving as chief for 15 years, past president of the Southern Wisconsin and Northern Illinois Firemen's Association, and former board member for 12 years. Surviving are four sons, Rich, Pat, Ken, and Marty Lang, four daughters, Kathy, Karen, and Jennifer and Joanne, 24 grandchildren, 26 great-grandchildren, sisters-in-law, Mary, Mary Jo, and Phyllis, and many nieces and nephews. Skip was preceded in death by his parents, Joe and Rena, his wife, Mary Jean, his in-laws, Kenneth and Geneva, his siblings, Elaine, Dale Lang, Gerald Lang, Bob Lang, and Joe Lang, and his brother-in-law, Robert Thiel. The Lang family wish to thank the nurses and staff at Galena Strauss Senior Care and Community and Hospice of Dubuque for the special care provided to their father. Online condolences may be left to the family at www.millerfield.com.
Luke R. Callan, Keeler, Wisconsin. Luke R. Callan, 33, of Keeler, Wisconsin, died Wednesday, March 20th at Unity Point Health Hospital, Madison, Wisconsin. Visitation will be from 1 to 4:30 on Saturday, March 24th at Leonard Funeral Home. A prayer service will be held at 1:30 with Deacon John Stearman officiating. To view the full obituary for Luke, please visit the Leonard Funeral Home website. He's survived by his mother, Mary Jo Loomis of Keeler, his sister, Shannon Aaron Soenson of DeWitt, and their three children, his brother, Travis Melissa Loomis of Cuba City, and their two children, his brother, Tony Callan of Keeler, and a sister, Nikki Callan of Dubuque, and her two children. His father, Matthew Callan of Holy Cross, Iowa, and many aunts, friends, nieces, nephews, cousins, and many friends, too many to mention.
Susan Link. Susan Sue Lipstock Link, age 61, passed away on March 22, 2024, after a long, courageous battle with multiple health issues. Visitation was held today at Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory on Rockdale Road. A funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. on Tuesday at St. Matthew Lutheran Church with Reverend Kyle Conant officiating. Additional visitation will begin at 9 a.m. Tuesday at the church. Burial will follow in Mount Olivet Cemetery. Sue was born on November 28, 1962 in Dubuque, Iowa, daughter of Eldon and Barbara Kilby Lipstock. She married Greg Link on September 9, 2006 at St. Matthew Lutheran Church. She was most recently employed as a group home lead at Goodwill Industries for the last 20 years, leaving reluctantly due to illness. Her Goodwill clients were family to her. Sue also previously worked at Belden Jewelers, Staples, and Crescent Electric. Sue enjoyed camping, bingo, and playing volleyball. She was an avid Cubs fan and Hawkeye fan who enjoyed watching and attending games and Cubs conventions. She loved cooking and baking. Survivors include her husband, Greg, her bonus children, whom she loved very much, Brian Link and Raylan Hendricks, her sisters-in-law, Joy, Benke, Jean, Cone, Phyllis, Linda, and Carol Link, her brother-in-law, Dave, her siblings, Jeff, Peter, Pam, all of Dubuque, multiple nieces and nephews. She was preceded in death by her parents, her uncle Robert, her mother-in-law Esther, her father-in-law Marion Link, her brothers-in-law Gerald and James. We would like to thank Dr. Schreiber and Dr. Herman, Sarah, Joe, and Zoe, the hospice of Dubuque staff, as well as the numerous nurses and staff at Finley Hospital that provided Sue with care and comfort throughout her illnesses. In lieu of flowers, memorial gifts may be donated to Kiwanis, Goodwill, or St. Matthew Lutheran Church.
Mary Lois Carey, Hazel Green, Wisconsin. Sister Mary Lois Carey, OP, died March 19, 2024, at St. Dominic Villa, Hazel Green, Wisconsin. Her remembering and funeral mass will be held Tuesday, March 26th, at 1:30 at St. Dominic Villa Chapel. Interment will follow at St. Clara Cemetery, Cincinnati, Wisconsin. Miller Funeral Home, East Dubuque, is handling arrangements. Sister Mary Lois was born July 2, 1931, to Thomas and Elizabeth Mahan Carey in Wausau, Wisconsin. She made profession as a Dominican sister at Cincinnati in 1951 and was given the name of Sister Thomaselle. She received a B.A. in history from Rosary College in River Forest, an M.A. in education and elementary administration from Loras College, Dubuque, and an M.A. in applied theology from the School of Applied Theology, Berkeley, California. Sister Mary Lois's ministry was dedicated to education and spiritual care. Sister Mary Lois was preceded in death by her parents, two brothers, Robert and John, and two sisters, Joyce Simon and Cincinnati Dominican Sister Cecilia Carey, OP. She is survived by a brother, Mark, and her Dominican sisters. Memorials may be made to the Dominican Sisters of Cincinnati or given online at www.cincinnati.org/donate.
James W. Powers, James Jimbo Powers, 75, of Dubuque, Iowa, passed away on Saturday, March 9th, 2024, at Mercy One Dubuque. A visitation will be held Monday, April 1, 2024, from 1:30 p.m. to 4:30 p.m. at Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory on Rockdale Road. The funeral service will be held at 4:30 with Deacon Mike Timmerman officiating. Military honors will be accorded by the American Legion Post No. 6 and the Iowa National Guard. Jim was born July 22, 1948, in Dubuque to William and Helen Laughlin Powers. He graduated from Wallert High School in 1966. He served in the U.S. Army from 1967 to 1969 and was stationed in Japan. Jim married Patty Humke on October 25, 2003. He was a proud father and grandfather and loving husband. Jim loved life. He was a consummate cook and the ultimate host, entertaining with a quick wit and one-liners. He took great pride in his yard, enjoyed Days of Our Lives and the challenge of daily Sudoku. Jim was an avid sports fan, especially the Bears and the Hawkeyes, but his true passion was playing golf. He will be deeply missed by his wife, Patty, son, Tracy, grandchildren, Emma, Will, and Brady Powers, all of Dubuque, siblings, Kate, Dennis, Kevin, siblings-in-law, Carla, Bob, Dennis, Brenda, and Renee. He was preceded in death by his parents, father and mother-in-law, Robert and Arville Humke, brothers Mike and Tom Powers, siblings-in-law Mary Powers, Jim Humke, Charmaine Zanto, and Deb Apple. In lieu of flowers, James W. Powers Memorial has been established. The family would like to express a special thank you to Mercy One ICU and CVU nurses, Dr. Ramon Bowden and Dr. Simser.
This brings us to the end of today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Sunday, March 24th. I'm your reader, Lois.
And Helen.
Support for this reading comes from the DuPaco R.W. Hofer Foundation. The Telegraph Herald can be heard each weekday at 2 p.m. All programs heard on IRIS are intended solely for the blind and print handicapped. If you have any questions or comments on this or any other IRIS program, please call our office toll-free at 877-404-4747. Thanks for listening. Thank you.
This is Jim Ralston with an Irish short take from the book Iowa Curiosities. How strange. A prairie in Iowa. In Chester, it may seem strange, but in the place that used to be nothing but prairie, people can now live their whole lives without ever seeing one. The flowers and the prairie grass that at one time blanketed the state grew so high that, as one 19th century soldier explorer said, you could tie the stalks together over the back of a house. In the prairie's stead, of course, we now have hundreds of thousands of acres of corn, soy, oats, and eventually end up in everything from breakfast cereals to soft drinks to internal combustion engines. But as beautiful as those rows and rows of corn can be, the way the gaps between the stalks suddenly open into slivers of shadow and then just as quickly close as you're driving by, the prairie is Iowa countryside's wilder, more extravagant incarnation. If you've never seen a prairie, be sure to visit the 240-acre Hayden Prairie, one of the largest in the state. The parcel of land is really the size of a single small farm, but it's big enough that if you walk far enough out into the tall grasses, the gravel roads and the fences disappear from view, and you can easily imagine what it was like here 160 years ago, when pioneers started the backbreaking work of turning prairie into farmland. Though the countless varieties of flowers and grasses blooming and growing, from big blue stem to purple prairie clover to yellow star grass, will vary with the season. The prairie is prolific and wildly beautiful, from early spring to autumn. Just a word of caution from our lawyers, though. Tying prairie grass around a horse's back is not recommended by the authors, as serious injuries and grass stains could result. Hayden Prairie is just a few miles south of Chester on CRV 26. That was an excerpt from Iowa Curiosities, Quirky Characters, Roadside Oddities, and Other Offbeat Stuff by Eric Jones, Dan Coffey, and Brett Thorkelson.